as I live and breathe. But there will be a perfectly simple... Enough, says Frank Andrade. He pulls the trigger and shoots Martin Lomax in the chest. Lomax doubles forward in his chair, blood spreading through his suit. Andrade aims the gun at Connie Johnson now, even though he was raised to shoot all the men first. He is too late, however. Connie Johnson squeezes off a single shot, which passes through Frank Andrade, through the window, and out towards the grey sea. Martin Lomax looks up as if to comment on the noise, but whatever comment he has will have to go unsaid. He topples over to his left and hits the floor. Frank Andrade slides off the windowsill, leaving a smear of thick scarlet blood trailing down a plastic radiator. His feet end up in the crook of Martin Lomax's arm. Two men sleeping, dreaming of guns and drugs and money, of always taking and never giving. What now? Thinks Lance. There are two corpses on the floor, there are two diamonds on the table, and a bag full of cocaine under the desk. He and Connie have their guns pointed at one another, neither quite sure what to do. Bogdan steps between the two guns. Connie, you have no business with this guy, and he has no business with you. He's just here for dead guys and diamonds. Get your bag and run. Outside on the pier are members of the special boat service, their eyes peeled for Poppy. They know not to touch Connie Johnson. Their orders are clear. She will reach her car. Connie grabs the bag, slides over the desk, and makes for the door. Bogdan opens the door for her. She reaches up to his face and kisses him. Call me, yeah? She says, and then disappears at speed, holdall full of cocaine swinging as she goes. Lance surveys the scene. The big Polish man next to him is blushing. The blood of the two corpses on the floor is starting to intermingle. Sue had raced from the van as soon as the two shots had gone off. Elizabeth hadn't felt the need to follow, and so Joyce has stayed where she is too. Well, I never, says Joyce. I don't really like anyone being killed if one can avoid it, says Elizabeth. But no great loss here. Joyce thinks about this. As soon as Elizabeth had decided to give Connie Johnson just the two diamonds, something like this had been inevitable. Elizabeth could be brutal sometimes. She was a very bad enemy to make. The world was better off without Frank Andrade Jr., that was for certain. Mark from Robertsbridge Taxis had wanted to talk to him about baseball, but had been told to shut the hell up. Except Andrade hadn't said hell. Mafia or no mafia, what a dreary, inadequate man Frank Andrade Jr. is. Was. And Martin Lomax, with his house and his millions and his work, the things he had helped to fund, the weapons, the gangs, the warlords, the smell of honeysuckle covering the stench. She thinks about his check for living with dementia. £5. She looks at the screen, sees his body, and feels nothing. Joyce has seen so many good people, innocent people, unlucky people die over the years. Sometimes she would go home and cry, and Jerry would hold her, knowing there was nothing he could say. But she would shed no tears for these two. Good riddance, Jerry would say, and Joyce quite agrees. Still, to make it happen, as Elizabeth has just done, was that worse? or just more honest? A question for someone cleverer there. She would ask Ibrahim. She watches the monitors and sees Lance approach each camera in turn and switch it off. The last thing she sees each time is her friendship bracelet. The final screen goes black. "What now?" she says to Elizabeth. "I don't suppose they found Poppy." "Oh, Poppy's dead, Joyce," says Elizabeth. "I worked it all out in the car on the way down here. It all clicked while the Jeremy Vine show was on."
"Oh,"
says Joyce.
"So what now?"
"Well," says Elizabeth, looking at her watch, "I'd give it half an hour or so, but then, I hope, a trip back to Godalming in a coroner's van with the person who killed Douglas and Poppy." Connie is running at full pelt along the pier. She has shot a mafia boss, she has kissed Bogdan, and she still has her cocaine, so it is hard to judge how that went. She needs to get back to the office, regroup. It honestly feels like she might come out of it all pretty cleanly. She trusts Bogdan, and the other guys seem to have no interest in her. The Range Rover is up ahead. The driver, Ryan Baird, was deeply unimpressive. She remembered he had done a few jobs for her before, and not particularly well. He stunk of weed and didn't know how the heated seating worked. And he tried to talk to her, which was unforgivable. When she sees Vic Vincent again, she will have to tell him the truth about his nephew, family or no family. Connie risks a look behind her, but no one is giving chase. No one is even looking in her direction, which is strange. A blonde woman in a business suit running down a pier with a sports bag. Surely someone would turn their head. But the pier was quiet, just a few couples in dark clothing walking arm in arm. She reaches the door of the Range Rover, throws it open and dives in. Straight into the lap of DCI Chris Hudson. She is cuffed before she can speak. "Hi, Connie," says Chris. "You're under arrest. You do not have to say anything, etc." In the front, Connie sees Ryan Baird, handcuffed in the passenger seat. Behind the wheel is Donna De Freitas. She turns to Connie. "I've never driven a Range Rover before, Connie, so forgive me if I'm a bit stop-start. I've put Fairhaven Police Station in the sat-nav, though, so we won't go far wrong. What's that scent you're wearing? It's gorgeous." "So, we just need another word for a horse," says Ibrahim, crossword propped up on his laptop. "Horsey?" says Kendrick, bouncing his way in and out of the FaceTime screen. "Too many letters," says Ibrahim. "I think it's the only word, though," says Kendrick. "So maybe they got it wrong." Ibrahim nods. "Perhaps, yes." He should have gone today, should have driven Joyce and Elizabeth to the airport, should have driven them down to the pier, should be there now. Ron has texted. "Two more people dead, but the right people, so everyone seems happy." Mark from the taxi company is driving Ron home, and he's bringing fish and chips with him. Elizabeth and Joyce still have a long night ahead of them.
"Do you still hurt?"
asks Kendrick. "I do," says Ibrahim. "But not when I'm talking to your granddad, and not when I'm talking to you." Through the windscreen of the Range Rover, Donna sees Elizabeth and Joyce climbing out the back of the white van. Elizabeth sees Donna behind the wheel and gives her a hopeful look. Donna responds with a thumbs up and Elizabeth nods and mouths, "Well done." Ron now appears at her open driver's window. "Oh, they're all here today," says Donna. "Pensioners outing." "That's Vic Vincent," says Connie, lunging forward as far as her cuffed hands will allow. "These are his drugs, arrest him." Ron looks at Connie. Never heard of him, love. Sounds like a right wrong'un. He then looks at Chris. What's she do then?
A murder, says Chris.
All on camera, plus a big bag of coke. That's her dealt with then, eh? Says Ron. He then looks over at Ryan Baird. You all right there, Ryan? Ryan Baird is quietly crying. You have a good cry, says Ron, and I'll tell you a story. Couple of weeks ago, you nicked a bloke's phone. My sort of age, the bloke, but looks older, losing a bit of hair. You gave him a nasty little kick to the back of the head, do you remember? No reason I can make out. I've seen him cry too, you know, since you done that. And I don't like it, Ryan. I know you don't care, old son, but he's my best mate, this fella. I want you to remember his name for me. Will you do that? Ibrahim Arif. You remember that name every night you're locked up. No one messes with Ibrahim Arif. Connie leans forward again, getting as close to Ron as she possibly can. She hisses, "When I get out, you're a dead man." Ron looks back at her. "Well, I'm 75 and you'll be doing 30 years, so, yeah, agreed." Donna sees Bogdan approach. Oh, boy. He walks up behind Ron and pulls him away from the window. "Time to go," says Bogdan, and Ron nods, giving the weeping Ryan Baird one final look. "Ibrahim Arif," says Ron. "Don't you forget now, Ryan." Bogdan looks at Donna. "You are Donna?"
"Yes," confirms Donna. "I am Bogdan," says Bogdan. "I know," says Donna.
Bogdan nods.
"Okay."
He then looks into the back seat and says, "Hello, Connie."
"You're all dead," says Connie. "Every single one of you."
"Sooner or later, for sure," agrees Bogdan.
And Donna watches him walk away, his arm around Ron. Chapter 75. Elizabeth has been a fool, but at least she knows why. It was all Marcus Carmichael's fault, really, right from the very beginning. The dead man by the River Thames, who never was. The unclaimed body collected from a London hospital and dressed up by her operatives. That reminder of the grand illusions of her trade. Making people believe exactly what you wanted them to believe. Making things complicated. Taking pains. Elizabeth had been a master of it. Douglas had been a master too. Somewhere in a drawer is a photograph of their wedding day. Elizabeth and Douglas with smiles so broad you would swear it was the happiest day of their lives. Nothing was ever how it seemed. Except, Elizabeth realises now, sometimes things are exactly how they seem. At least she has realised this in time. She is sitting on bench seating in the back of the coroner's van. They are heading to the morgue at Godalming. The same morgue where Douglas and Poppy's bodies had been identified. Next to her is Joyce. She is doing a word search on her phone. Elizabeth knows she should listen to Joyce more often. Of course Poppy hadn't done it. Poppy hadn't murdered Douglas, then murdered some poor young woman and had the body identified as her own. Poppy hadn't hatched a plot with her mother to steal the diamonds. There was another explanation for Siobhan. Who on earth would ever believe that Poppy had done it? Only someone very stupid. Or someone too clever by half. Elizabeth is coming to understand that perhaps, just sometimes, things are exactly what they seem. when Ron gives her a hug, or Joyce bakes her a cake, or Ibrahim laminates a document for her. They are not playing a game. They don't need anything in return other than her happiness and her friendship. They just like her. It has taken Elizabeth a long time to accept the truth of that. On the bench opposite her is Sue Reardon. Sue Reardon has a mind like hers. They had laughed about it, peas in a pod. Elizabeth hadn't realised the half of it. Between the benches along the length of the van lies the corpse of Martin Lomax. Frank Andrade's is being dealt with by MI6. His is in a different van, travelling down a different motorway. Poppy and Douglas were both shot dead. There were no fake corpses. There was no grand cover-up. They were both shot dead by Sue Reardon. For a very obvious reason. And Sue Reardon had spun Elizabeth a line she knew she wouldn't be able to resist. How to prove it, though? Elizabeth looks over at Joyce, tongue sticking out as she circles words with her finger, like butter wouldn't melt. She is recording everything on her phone, just as she has been told. The first part of the journey had been the expected barrage of questions from Sue about the diamonds and who on earth was Connie Johnson and why did she have a bag full of cocaine with her. Elizabeth had answered all the queries as politely as she felt able. But now it was her turn to ask the questions. "So," she begins, leaning forward and smiling at Sue over the draped corpse of Martin Lomax. "We didn't find Poppy then?" "No," says Sue, "nowhere to be seen." "Curious," says Elizabeth. "Perhaps she really is dead. Do you think, Sue?" "Perhaps," says Sue. "But we still can't explain her mum looking for the diamonds." "You nearly had me, you know," says Elizabeth. "I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about," says Sue. "You killed Douglas and Poppy. You knew where they were. You walked in, you shot them, and you walked straight out again." "Sounds very simple," says Sue. "It was simple. But you knew simple wouldn't be interesting enough for me. So you led me on a piece of string around all sorts of wonderful theories, just to buy yourself a bit of time to find the diamonds. Or for me to find the diamonds for you, keeping me interested." "Well, now it sounds outlandish," says Sue. "What an imagination you have, Elizabeth." Elizabeth shakes her head. "My imagination was my downfall here, I'm afraid. As soon as I realised it was you who slipped Siobhan's phone number into Joyce's pocket, the whole thing fell into place." "Oh, I wondered why you asked about that," says Joyce. Sue Reardon's phone buzzes. She opens a message and smiles. "Well, speak of the devil, there's Poppy's mum now, with some good news." "Do tell," says Elizabeth. "I'm told we've found the diamonds, in Joyce's microwave of all places. How pleasingly suburban. But I suppose the gloves are off, at least." Sue Reardon presses an intercom button and talks to the driver. "A change of plan. Cooper's Chase Retirement Village. It's not far." An echoing electronic voice replies, "Postcode?" Sue thinks for a moment, takes a gun from her bag and points it at Joyce. "Joyce, what's the postcode?" Chapter 76. Chris Hudson munches on a carrot baton. When you got used to them, they actually weren't so bad. Well, they were, but it seemed to matter less. Connie Johnson is in her cell. Her interview had been terminated fairly quickly. It consisted almost entirely of threats to kill him, Donna, Bogdan, and whoever she imagined Ron to be. Bogdan came in for some particularly graphic abuse. No mention of Patrice, though, that particular threat forgotten. He will never mention it to Patrice or Donna, and he knows Ron or Bogdan won't either. Ryan Baird's interview had been a quieter affair. 8 minutes of silent, shoulder-shaking sobbing before his solicitor suggested they might reconvene in the morning. Perfect. An evening off for Chris. Ryan Baird's solicitor, Chris couldn't help but notice, was still dressing better, now had a nicer haircut, and was even starting to lose some weight. He was doused in Lynx Africa, but as Chris well knows, you can't change everything all at once. After the interview, the solicitor had taken Donna aside and asked her out for a drink. His wedding ring in his pocket, no doubt. Donna had told him she would love to, but that they should probably wait so as not to jeopardize the ongoing investigation. Even at the end of a long day, Donna was a quick thinker. Chris's mind goes back to the table outside Maidstone Crown Court. The promises Ron and Bogdan had made him. They had come good. Thank you, gents. Patrice will come down to Fairhaven again next Sunday, and this time Chris will tell her that he loves her. Sometimes the universe turns your way. He hopes that Elizabeth and Joyce got what they wanted from today, too. A man voluntarily eating carrot batons. That really was someone to be. Chapter 77. Now it is Elizabeth who is staring down the barrel of Sue Reardon's gun. How many gun barrels had she stared down in her career? 20? 30? None of them had killed her yet. The basic rule is, if they don't kill you immediately, they're not going to kill you. There are always exceptions, but no point worrying about them for now. The coroner's van is heading towards Cooper's Chase. How had Siobhan found the diamonds at Joyce's? Someone had told her exactly where they were. Ibrahim? Stephen? Been forced to tell her? Please, no. She has to keep calm. Can I tell you what I think happened? Asks Elizabeth. Just to pass the time. Or is that all a bit James Bond for you? Please do, says Sue. I can't tell you how delighted I was to fool you. Poppy found the letter, Elizabeth begins. Just as Joyce said, but she didn't go after the diamonds and she didn't give it to her mum. She gave it to you, because that's what Poppy would do. She did her job. So you read the letter, you read Douglas's confession, but the confession part wasn't news to you. You'd known all along. You and Douglas had planned the whole thing together, yes?
A little retirement plan, yes, agrees Sue.
I had a brief, awful thought at one point that Douglas and Poppy were lovers, says Elizabeth, but I was wrong, wasn't I?
You and Douglas were lovers.
Oh, yes, says Joyce. I can see that.
Have I got that right? Asks Elizabeth.
You have, says Sue.
Joyce looks between the two of them.
He definitely had a type, didn't he? I see the appeal, I promise, says Elizabeth. I was almost 10 years older than him, you 10 years younger. He very neatly spanned our generations, didn't he?
He was very handsome, says Joyce. Not my type at all, no offence to either of you, but very handsome. Elizabeth looks straight into Sue's eyes.
So you were reading the letter, saw the key, the locker number, and what have you. I assume he hadn't told you where he'd hidden them.
He told me they were safe, says Sue. Elizabeth nods.
So it was interesting information to you, lucrative at the very least. But the big news came further down in the letter, didn't it? When he said he still loved me. That he would wait for me if needs be. That must have been the moment you realised the two of you weren't in this together. That you and Douglas weren't about to head off into the sunset with the 20 million. That was the moment you realised you would have to kill him.
Sue shrugs. The barrel of the gun shrugs with her.
He wanted it all for himself, says Elizabeth. Or worse, he wanted it for him and me. Though you're bright enough to know that would never happen. Originally, the two of you were just going to see out the investigation, let it fizzle down to nothing and cash in. So now you needed a change of plan.
Perfect so far, says Sue.
Too late, of course, but perfect. So you decide you want the money for yourself, says Elizabeth.
I don't blame you one bit, says Joyce.
Joyce is still doing her word search. You had to hand it to Joyce sometimes, even with a gun pointed at her best friend. Joyce trusts her to get out of this situation.
Does Elizabeth trust herself? That's a very good question.
What is going to face them back at Cooper's Chase? Is Stephen safe? Is Ibrahim safe? Elizabeth keeps thinking as she talks. So how to kill him? Well, first attempt, you tell Martin Lomax where Douglas is, which is as good as signing Douglas's death warrant. Cowardly, but you need him out of the way if you're going to escape with the money yourself, and you're angry. Lomax sends his man, Andrew Hastings, to kill Douglas, but poor Poppy gets in the way and shoots Hastings. Douglas, very much still alive, a bump in the road, but never mind. You are still determined, and that's understandable. We all fall out of love, don't we?
We most certainly do, says Sue.
Not me, says Joyce.
Nonsense, Joyce, you're in and out of love monthly, says Elizabeth, then returns to staring into Sue Reardon's gun. So, you still need Douglas out of the picture and you realise you're going to have to do it yourself. You know you can move Douglas and Poppy to Hove, to a house you have used before, a house you can access easily. So, killing him yourself will be easy. But how to get away with it? That was your question.
It was, agrees Sue Reardon. I didn't need to get away with it for long, just until I found the diamonds.
And perhaps, says Elizabeth, you were worried that I might work things out.
I was, says Sue. I just needed you to find the diamonds before you worked out I was the killer. And you didn't let me down.
She worked it out eventually, to be fair, says Joyce.
But I still get to the diamonds, says Sue. As soon as I've picked them up, I'll be off. I can disappear easily, Elizabeth, as you'll know. So that's what I'll do. Feel free to tell everyone what I did. They won't find me.
You're not going to shoot us, says Joyce.
Not if you behave yourselves, says Sue.
Not really our speciality, says Joyce.
I knew you wouldn't be able to resist a clever little mystery, Elizabeth, says Sue. I knew I'd have you chasing your tail. You were having lunch with the killer, talking tactics without even knowing. Isn't that a hoot?
Elizabeth nods.
Your plan forms and you realise you are going to need help with it, so you call Siobhan. Now, this is where I'm hazy. Who exactly is she? An old friend, I imagine. An old colleague who owed you a favour.
Guess again, says Sue Reardon.
No matter, says Elizabeth. She agrees to whatever terms you present her with. Help me with a double murder and... what?
£1 million, says Sue Reardon.
That would do it, says Elizabeth. You come to Cooper's Chase to take Andrew Hastings' body away, and on your way out you slip a note into Joyce's cardigan simply saying, ring my mum, with Siobhan's phone number.
Wait, says Joyce. Siobhan isn't Poppy's mum?
Keep up, Joyce, says Sue.
Don't speak to Joyce like that, says Elizabeth.
Oh, I don't mind, says Joyce.
Elizabeth feels the coroner's van take a sharp left turn and slow down. It crosses a cattle grid. They are at Cooper's Chase.
You send Siobhan to check the lockers for the diamonds. You'd been in before, I presume, to make sure there were security cameras.
I had, says Sue.
Trusting that I would eventually check the recordings and be led to Siobhan and put two and two together.
Which you were and which you did, says Sue.
I knew you wouldn't be able to resist it. The idea of Poppy faking the whole thing, so unlikely. I knew you were just clever enough to fall for it.
Sirens go past them at speed. Sue pauses, then visibly relaxes. Ambulances, not police. Elizabeth goes cold. Driving at speed from Cooper's Chase. Who was in the ambulances? Stephen?
You even thought Douglas had faked it at first, didn't you?
Laughs Sue.
That was a delightful surprise. Not my plan at all, but I was happy enough to go along with you for a few days. You were my useful idiot, Elizabeth, if you don't mind me saying.
Elizabeth tries to take her mind off the ambulances, their sirens now faint in the distance.
Siobhan comes back to you empty-handed. The next day, you enter the safe house on St. Albans Avenue. You shoot Poppy first, I'm guessing.
Correct, says Sue.
A shame, but needs must sometimes.
She'd seen the letter.
And helpful in encouraging Douglas to let you know where the diamonds were.
What did he tell you before you shot him? He obviously didn't let on.
He just said, stick close to Elizabeth, she'll find them. I thought that sounded true enough and the best I was going to get, so I shot him.
And you did stick close to me, I'll give you that.
And you did find them, so thank you, says Sue. As I say, a useful idiot. I'll be out of your hair very soon, I promise.
The van pulls to a halt. Sue puts her gun hand into her handbag, but keeps the gun pointing at Elizabeth. The driver opens the back doors.
After you, ladies, says Sue, and the driver helps Elizabeth and Joyce climb down. Sue follows, needing no help.
We won't be long, says Sue to the driver. Just need to spend a penny.
It is 5 p.m. The sky is darkening and lights are coming on across Cooper's Chase. The normal business of a normal day. Quizzes on the TV, books being read, grandchildren on the phone, a few tardy birds flying to their roosts. Elizabeth sees Colin Clements taking in a garden chair from his patio. Miranda Scott from Wordsworth Court is posting a letter. She enters competitions and last year won a lifetime's supply of washing powder. Purcell must have rubbed their hands with glee when they discovered she was 92.
All is quiet in this happy place. Another day done, family safe and sound, curtains closed and heating on. Nothing you'll ever see on the news, but something you should really pay more attention to, just the gentle hum of contentment. Take a look out of the window and there is nothing to see except two old women taking an evening stroll together. It's Joyce and Elizabeth, isn't it? Thick as thieves, those two. There is a younger woman walking a few steps behind, heading over to Joyce's, I think. As soon as the shooting on the pier had finished, I was on the phone, says Sue. Three men Martin Lomax put me in touch with a while ago. Men who could do a few jobs off the books. Ex-Special Forces, armed to the teeth. They were standing by, so I sent them straight here with Siobhan. I knew someone would know where the diamonds were. Your friend with the broken ribs, or that husband of yours, Elizabeth. Though from what I read, you could tell him anything and he wouldn't remember. Poor thing. She sees Elizabeth stiffen in front of her and she smiles. My God, this was harder than it was supposed to be. The perfect crime, Douglas had said to me. No victims. How many deaths now? Five? Although we all heard the ambulances, so who knows, maybe a couple more. Elizabeth's phone starts ringing in her bag. Don't touch it, says Sue. Elizabeth does as she is told, but she doesn't need to touch it. She has recognized the personalized ringtone. They reach the front door of Joyce's building. Elizabeth looks up at her best friend's window. The curtains are shut. They were not shut when she picked Joyce up this morning. Joyce keys in her security code and the three women enter the building. The lift doors are directly in front of them. Elizabeth presses the button and the doors open. Sue Reardon smiles. If you try anything in that lift, I've got three armed men upstairs. We've given up, Sue, says Elizabeth. Don't you get it? Just get your diamonds and go. The doors close and the lift jolts upwards. Sue stands behind Joyce and Elizabeth, the gun at their backs. As the lift doors open on the first floor, her view is obscured. Joyce, hit the ground! Shouts Elizabeth. Elizabeth and Joyce throw themselves to the floor, giving Bogdan a clear shot. He hits Sue exactly where he aims, through the shoulder. Sue drops her bag and her gun, her eyes wide in surprise. Bogdan kicks Sue's gun away, then helps Joyce and Elizabeth to their feet. Come in, says Bogdan. I've put the kettle on. Chapter 78.
You've never seen anything like it, says Stephen, sitting on Joyce's sofa. I was having 40 winks in my chair when I hear a noise. I open my eyes, three fellas pointing guns at my head. Hold your horses, I say. What's this about? I'm imagining you're looking for Elizabeth. You know, all dressed in black, guns and what have you. Not a bit of it, says the fella in the middle. Tell us where the diamonds are.
He is interrupted by a low moan. Joyce is tending to Sue Reardon's shoulder while she sits on a kitchen chair.
Stop moaning, you big baby, says Joyce, tightening a bandage. So I play the innocent Frenchman, as it were. What diamonds, all this caper, and they don't like it one bit.
Then, Madam here, Stephen nods to another kitchen chair where Siobhan sits, hands tied behind her, walks in, friendly as you like. Just tell us, Stephen, tell us and we'll be on our way. Anyway, I stall for time. I couldn't remember where you'd gone, Elizabeth, but perhaps you'd be getting back soon. So here's me. Oh, I don't know about diamonds. I'm afraid not my area. You need the boss. She'll be back presently. And this lady, I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name. Siobhan, says Siobhan. Beautiful name. She's saying Elizabeth won't be back any time soon, and she won't be back at all if we don't get the diamonds. Well, I think then you don't know Elizabeth like I know Elizabeth. One thing you can rely on with Elizabeth is she'll be back. Never let me down yet. Never will, darling, says Elizabeth. Tensions start to run high. Where are the diamonds? What diamonds? A couple of the fellas start ripping the place apart, becoming a regular occurrence, eh, dear? Not even worth tidying the drawers these days, agrees Elizabeth. But then I hear a key in the lock and think, well, here she is. But the door opens and it's the man himself. Stephen motions over to the figure in the corner of the room.
Ron had gone home to watch snooker, and I thought Stephen would like to hear about the shootings, says Bogdan.
Before you know it, the three chaps all have their guns pointing at Bogdan, the poor bugger, and I'm thinking, get out of this one then.
Bogdan takes up the story.
Stephen says these guys are looking for the diamonds, and I say, well, you came to the right guy. Follow me. They're at Joyce's. If I show you, I get to keep one? And they look at Siobhan, and she's like, sure. So, come with me, but hide the guns when we get out the front door. I don't want you scaring the old people. So there, grumble, grumble, but okay, and out we go.
Immediately, I hear the most terrific noise, says Stephen. 20 seconds or so, then in walks Bogdan and asks me to give him a hand clearing up.
Elizabeth,
so the ambulances.
That was the three guys, yes, says Bogdan. So I say to Siobhan, look, who's behind all this? And she's looking at the guys with the guns on the floor and thinks maybe she should tell the truth. She says she works with Sue. Okay, I get it. So I say send a message to Sue, tell her you have the diamonds.
Where shall I say they are?
She says. And I don't know, so I look at Stephen.
And I say, tell her the truth, no reason not to. They're in Joyce's microwave.
Elizabeth looks over at Sue.
I hope that's agony, dear.
We had a good laugh about it, didn't we, Elizabeth? Stephen continues.
She had to move them because she kept forgetting and making cups of tea.
Oh, I'm the figure of fun now, says Joyce, but she is smiling.
The ambulances came. They had a lot of questions, understandably.
I told them to talk to Chris Hudson, says Bogdan. He owes me a favor.
Oh, does he? Says Elizabeth.
And then we toddled over to Joyce's to wait for you. I saw you through the curtains, says Bogdan. Gave you a ring to let you know I was here. Then I shot Sue.
And that's us up to date, says Stephen.
Elizabeth walks over to Joyce's microwave and pulls out a green felt bag. It was usually full of Scrabble tiles, but now is full of diamonds. She pours them onto the kitchen table in front of Sue Reardon.
Here you are, Sue. This is what it was all for. Poppy, Douglas, Andrew Hastings, Lomax, Frank Andrade, and this is the closest you'll ever get.
To be fair, calls Joyce from the sofa, Martin Lomax and Frank Andrade weren't really Sue's fault. That was you. Elizabeth nods, conceding the point. She turns to Siobhan.
And how did you get roped in, Siobhan? What's your connection here?
I'm easily led, says Siobhan. Always have been.
And it's not really Siobhan. It's Sally. Sally Montague, if you remember that name.
Douglas's three X's. United. Sue Reardon groans again, a guttural cry.
Please, I need to go to the hospital.
I think Bogdan might have used up all the ambulances, says Elizabeth.
We'll give it a couple of hours, says Joyce. I'll make sure you don't die. It'll be much more fun to see you in prison. Would you like some painkillers?
Yes, please, says Sue, the anguish etched onto her face.
Shame, says Joyce.
I don't have any.
Chapter 79. Patrice looks at the clock, sighs, and pours herself another glass of wine. 9:30, dark outside, and she is only halfway through marking the Jane Austen homework. She thinks about Chris. She thinks about him more and more these days. Patrice has fallen in love before, and this is beginning to show all the signs. That might just be the wine and the Jane Austen, though. She has always worried about Donna's work, and now she worries about Chris's, too. Is that something she could get over? At least they are both in Fairhaven. That felt safer than London. How much trouble could there be in Fairhaven? There were schools down there, weren't there? Of course there were, Patrice, you idiot. There are schools everywhere. What even made you think about it? It's not like you're going to be moving down there or anything. She had felt safe and happy there during half term. Safe with Chris and with Donna nearby. Happy with Chris and with Donna nearby. They both feel a long way away now as she sits alone in the house. But the weekend? At the weekend, she is driving down to see them. She thinks about ringing Chris, maybe tell him how much she's thinking about him. Maybe. Or perhaps just tell him tomorrow. When she'd had less to drink. Yes. There are certain steps you take in life that you can't easily turn back from, so take them with care. You don't want to make a fool of yourself. Patrice smiles. How could she ever make a fool of herself in front of Chris? She will ring him. She'll mark three more essays, then she'll ring Chris as her treat. She will be slurring her words a little bit, but if you slur your words with a man, you can get away with saying anything. Maybe she will mention Jane Austen and see where that leads. It will be nice to hear his voice. Do they have darts on TV on Mondays? If they do, she is sure that's what he'll be watching. There is a noise on the street outside, probably foxes. She picks up the next essay on the pile, Ben Adams. Patrice suspects that Ben hasn't read a single word of Sense and Sensibility. She also suspects he has watched the film instead, mainly because at one point he accidentally calls Eleanor Dashwood Emma Thompson. Nice try, kid. Oh, God, this is going to take her forever. Patrice has said it so many times, marking will be the death of her. As she picks up the next essay, she hears a knock at the door. Another glance at the clock. That's late. Patrice knows she should probably ignore it. But perhaps it's a neighbour needing something, and she'll do anything to leave the marking alone for a moment. Patrice walks down the hallway, glass of wine still in hand. Donna has told her 100 times to get deadlocks, to get peepholes. Never answer your door to strangers, Mum. How old did she think Patrice was? Patrice will get peepholes and deadlocks when she's older. Patrice isn't even 50 and she's not going to be frightened in her own home. It's nice that Donna cares, but Patrice can look after herself, thank you very much. She should ring Donna too. She's been a little down. So, ring Chris, then ring her little girl. Or ring her little girl first? Patrice puts her wine down on the hall table and gives her hair a quick check. She nods her approval. You should always look your best, whoever's at the door. The knock comes again, a little more insistent. All right, all right. Patrice flicks up the latch and pulls the door open. Her mouth falls open. Marking forgotten, wine forgotten, hair forgotten. It is not a neighbour. She tries to compute, but there is no time. Look, says Chris, standing on her doorstep, flowers in his hand and tears on his cheek. I know it's late, but it couldn't wait. I can't go another minute without telling you. I'm in love with you. I'm sorry if that's stupid. Patrice tries to think of something to say. She is so pleased she checked her hair. What would Jane Austen say? Can I come in? Chris asks. Yes, my darling. Yes, you can come in, she says. Patrice takes her wine from the hall table and reaches out her hand to lead Chris inside. That will do just fine. Chapter 80. I just thought I would come in and have a freshen up, says Joyce. I'll put the Hoover around and a bit of Mr. Sheen. I won't go anywhere near your bits and bobs. Thank you, Joyce, says Ibrahim, sipping his tea. I'm sorry to miss all the fun yesterday. I'll fill you in, don't worry. Ron is fuming that he missed it, says Ibrahim, especially as Siobhan was there. It won't do Ron any harm to keep it in his pants for now, says Joyce, dusting the sideboard. How are you feeling in yourself? Ibrahim slides back into his armchair. He gives a small smile and a shrug. Joyce nods and gets to work. I need your help today. I'm sorry, Joyce, I can't. Not today. You don't even know what I want yet, Ibrahim laughs. Of course I do. It's the first day of peace we've had for weeks, Joyce. You want me to drive you to your animal rescue centre to pick up your dog? Well, yes, please, that is what I'd like. Why don't you finish your tea and we can head off? Lovely drive. I'm afraid not. You seem to think I might take no for an answer, says Joyce. How long have you known me? Ibrahim leans forward and puts his tea back down on the low table. Joyce, look at me. Joyce puts down her duster and does just that. I know what you are trying to do, and I am moved that you are trying. You know I am frightened. You know I don't want to leave this flat, and I certainly don't want to leave this village. You know that is unhealthy, and you want to look after me. You are too clever to come over and tell me to pull myself together. You know I am in too many pieces for that. And so your tactic is different. Your tactic is cleverer. Ibrahim, please help me, is your tactic. Ibrahim, I need you. But Joyce, you don't need to go to the rescue center today. Alan isn't going anywhere. I've seen his picture. You are the only person in the world who would choose him. And when you do go to the rescue center, you won't need me to drive you. Get a taxi, or get someone else to drive you. Gordon Playfair has a Land Rover, which would be perfect for dog transportation. Your kindness is welcome, but it is transparent. I am not leaving this village again. I have made my peace with that. Joyce nods. You read people very well, Joyce. Don't think I don't spot that. I see how you do it, too. Coercion through kindness. But understand this. Behind me, in these files, there are people I couldn't help. People beyond reach. Problems I couldn't fix, whichever way I twisted and turned. You like to fix things too, Joyce. You can't bear it when something is out of place. And so, you come in and you smile. And I know your affection for me is genuine. And you ask me to drive you to the animal rescue center. How could I resist? And before you know it, I'm back behind the wheel of that car. I'm outside the village, and I'm soon surrounded by lost stray dogs. And while I don't like dogs, quite the opposite, I am sure to feel a kinship with these animals, lost and alone. Lost and alone, and waiting for Joyce to make things better. It is a terrific plan. You are a very good and clever friend, but, and I need you to really listen to this, it's not going to happen. I am too scared. There are times when a wise man admits defeat. And I hope you agree I am a wise man. I have many certificates. So, thank you from the bottom of my heart. But, just for once, Joyce, this is a problem you cannot fix. Ibrahim leans back in his chair. I understand, nods Joyce, and places the duster over her shoulder. I wonder, though, if I might just say this. Around 45 minutes later, Joyce spies the first sign for the animal rescue center, and Ibrahim takes the exit. I just love to see a horse in a field, says Joyce. When you can tell they're happy. Happiness is what life is all about, don't you think? Ibrahim shakes his head. I can't agree. The secret of life is death. Everything is about death, you see. Well, recently, yes, agrees Joyce. But surely not everything. That seems a bit much. In essence, says Ibrahim, our existence only makes sense because of it. It provides meaning to our narrative. Our direction of travel is always towards it. Our behavior is
either because we fear it or because we choose to deny it. We could drive past this spot once a year, every year, and neither the horse nor ourselves would get younger. Everything is death. That's one way of looking at things, I suppose, says Joyce. It's the only way, says Ibrahim. Will there be a toilet at the rescue centre? You would think so, says Joyce. And if not, there will be a staff toilet. Oh, I can't use a staff toilet, says Ibrahim. I always feel I haven't earned it. Surely if everything is about death, then also nothing is about death, says Joyce, applying lipstick in the passenger mirror. How so? Asks Ibrahim. Well, just say that everything was blue. You, me, Alan, everything. Okay. Well, if everything was blue, then we wouldn't need the word blue, would we? I accept that, accepts Ibrahim. And if we had no word for blue, then nothing would be blue, would it? Well, death is an event, and so, begins Ibrahim, then sees the entrance to the rescue centre up on his left. We're here. Which is a relief, because Joyce does sort of have a point. Perhaps everything isn't about death after all. What a time to find out. Chapter 81. Bogdan stares at the chessboard, but it makes no sense. He has just made a fatal error, and he never makes fatal errors. Stephen's lips are pursed. He has spotted the mistake. He looks up at Bogdan. Goodness, he says. Quite unlike you, quite unlike you. Stephen moves his bishop to capitalize on the error. Bogdan is doomed. He looks down at the board again, but the pieces start dancing. They won't behave. He tries to blink it all away. Get everything back in its place, everything in order. Something on your mind? Asks Stephen. Nothing, says Bogdan, which is usually true, but not today. If you say so, then who am I to question? Says Stephen. You killed someone else, perhaps?